This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Steve Safran is the founder and editor of LostRemote.com, one of the very best blogs on the internet that covers the revolution, the continuing revolution of the internet here in this great land of ours. Good afternoon, Steve.
You know, the introductions to me are such great build-ups. I always feel like there's just no way I'm ever going to live up to it. You got Van Halen, you got Go Flight from Apollo, you've got a breathy girl. I got to hang up. There's no way I'm going to meet expectations.
It's all for you, Steve.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, how are you, Coy?
I'm very, very good. How have you been?
I've been great. Good summer.
How's the weather in Boston?
Lovely here, although dark clouds are gathering over Fenway Park. What can I tell you?
Uh-oh. Well, we could use some rain down here in Central Virginia. They're talking drought down here. And our rivers look horrible. And let's get right to it. Apple introduced the iPhone since the last time we spoke.
Yes.
Your take.
Well, it's a marvelous device. There's no question. It's revolutionary. It if anything, exceeded the hype. I didn't get one because of the limitations on it. It's not on the network that I am on. They did tie their fortunes to AT&T because of the very strange quirks in the way that our cell phone service is set up here in the States. It's not so in other countries. The only drawback that I see to it, apart from that, is I think the people don't realize how limited the storage is on those things. 6 gigs or so does not hold as much video as people think. They're going to see that chews up memory pretty quickly. As for the price controversy, where people were paying $600 and then found out it got quickly cut down by $200,
yeah.
You know, buyer beware. Apple knew what it was doing all along, and this is not the first time in history someone has paid a lot for a computer, and that's what it is, only to find that it got knocked down in price fairly quickly. Sorry, folks.
Yeah, I have actually a friend of mine who got one right away, one of the first buyers here in Charlottesville, and it is. I was surprised at how heavy it is.
Yeah, they're really substantial, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you just put it in your pocket, boy, you feel it. You can't really walk around with it in your pocket without being very aware of the fact it's like a big rock in your pocket.
It is. And, you know, I wrote a piece that said that first I said, okay, I'm going to tell you about a device that does all of the following. And I listed all of the things that it did. And I said, now you tell me, is this a phone? Is this a computer? What is this? At what point do we stop calling these things cell phones?
That's a great point. Because we finally have the little machine that combines them all.
We do. And by the way, on my Mac computer, and I am a Mac guy, full disclosure, I can make calls. I have Skype. I can make phone calls. Does that make this thing a phone? It does all the same things that the iPhone does. In fact, I was surprised that they called it an iPhone at all, because it's an iPod that makes calls. It's wild. That's why I love being in convergence so much.
Yeah, and convergence, which you have been educating us about for many years, long before people were even really using the word to talk about all of these things. What, look in your crystal ball. Now, what's going on, Steve? What is happening? What is this convergence?
Well, you know, if anything, what's happening is a convergence in the products themselves. As you know, we no longer need a separate PDA to keep our appointments and a separate device to listen to our music and a separate device for our phone calls. But at the same time, there's a divergence. And by that, I mean that for information from the internet, you can get it on all of these devices, that something like Apple TV lets you download your information, your shows from the internet, but you don't have to watch them on your computer. You can watch them on your TV. The Slingbox, which is a great invention, you hook that up to your cable, and you can watch, if you travel, you can watch your TV shows on your computer wherever you are or on your mobile phone. I get to watch the Red Sox wherever I travel as a consultant. So there's a divergence of the information that you used to be strapped to your computer to watch. And there's a convergence of all of these different technologies on all of these mobile devices.
And of course, this is we've seen it over the past 10 years, certainly in a big, big way, that this will affect the culture that we are marinated in on a daily basis. And it only will affect it more and more and more.
It has. And, you know, obviously the question is for better or worse. And I am distinctly in the for better camp. I firmly believe that democracy is always improved anytime communication is improved. You know, do we get a lot of junk culture along with it? Absolutely. But we've always had junk culture. You know, we're living through OJ2 right now, but we had OJ1 long before we had any convergence with us.
We're talking with Steve Safran of LostRemote.com, where TV finds the future. Steve, let's talk about the evolution of Google. Once upon a time, just a little search engine that could. And now, all of a sudden, we are seeing them roll out these Office products. And we'll talk about the PowerPoint clone here in a second. But I did want to let you know, my office, recently we had a staff meeting, and the boss said, hey, we're switching to Google Calendar.
Yeah, you can now run your own calendar online, Word-like product online, word processing online, an Excel spreadsheet-like product online, and now a PowerPoint-like thing online. And you say, well, why is that necessarily good? Well, first of all, it's free, which is always good. Secondly, it allows you to collaborate on the product with other people. So, Coy, if you and I, for example, want to work on a word processing document together, we can do that, even though we are in separate cities, or we can work on a PowerPoint-style presentation together. What's really subversive, of course, about all of this is that they're giving the thing away, which makes Microsoft-type folks crazy.
Because you don't have to go out and buy the program anymore.
Right.
You can
right.
just download it from Google, and we can work on a file together, and I don't ever have to email it back to you. We can just log into that
right.
document.
Now, you do have to be online. And, of course, if you own the software from Microsoft, you don't have to be online. But I imagine in short order that will be taken care of as well.
We're talking with Steve Safran of LostRemote.com. Steve, tell us about let's look at some of the posts recently at Lost Remote. One was about a study revealing that media executives continue to worry about user content. Flesh that out for us.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they continue to worry about all the wrong things, is the truth of the matter. That they're looking at kind of how the behaviors of people and how we, you know, what it is that we're interested in versus what it is that they think we should be interested in. And there's this tremendous disconnect that's going on. And it's really interesting to see because the media executives have always thought that, well, we're going to kind of dictate what it is that people want. And it turns out that people have a different approach to all of it and, you know, a different take on it. They're saying, well, no, matter of fact, we want this.
There was an article recently on Lost Remote about the New York Times just recently opened up their premium section, Time Select, which begs the question, unless you really like to hold the newspaper, why subscribe to the paper edition when all the New York Times now is available online?
Well, I still like having a newspaper or magazine in my hand, and I don't think that those are really ever going to totally go away. You know, there's something to be said for having hard copy with you, but the Times undertook this experiment where they said, okay, well, we recognize that people are going to be able to get their news from several resources, but what we have as a brand in having these opinion columns, we have Tom Friedman, nobody else has that, so people will pay for that. They were wrong. Just like CNN tried with their pipeline video service, and they said, well, people will subscribe so that they can just watch this only from us. I think it was a perfectly good experiment to try. But it turns out that there's not much demand for paid opinion on the internet. Go figure, with so much free opinion to be had out there. It's really interesting. They've recognized that the money has to be in advertising. Now, I've been talking with my friend Charlie Kravitz here at NECN in Boston, which is a 24-hour news channel, and the question that he raises, which is a perfectly valid one, is journalism ultimately going to suffer in the end by not having the budget that it used to have lots and lots of employees in the newsroom? A perfectly valid question.
We're talking with Steve Safran of LostRemote.com, where TV finds the future. Steve, there was a report recently that spending online for online advertising is now predicted to surpass television and newspapers by 2011.
Yeah, not surprising. I think TV still probably has a little way to go. It's certainly going to surpass newspapers fairly quickly. I'm not sure I believe it's going to surpass TV that quickly, but I can't do math, so what do I know? the charts are unmistakable, that the money is shifting. And if I were an advertiser, I would want to shift my money to online because the advertising is targeted. I know exactly who it's going to. It's not just getting me, you know, 300,000 eyeballs, and I don't know if they actually read the thing or that it did me any good. I would rather target 3,000 people that I knew were interested in my product than 300,000 people that may or may not read the thing or throw it out or not check out the section at all. So it's a very effective use of media money to be spending it online. And, you know, you see the newspaper subscriptions going down and the interest in the web going up. Where would you invest?
Steve, tell us about online video and some of the changes you're seeing, because we're seeing online video now coming not just from, you know, your local TV stations, but newspapers now are starting to churn out some pretty decent online video news stories.
They are. They are. What they're doing is they're arming their reporters. Used to call them print reporters. They're just reporters now. With small handheld video cameras. They bring the video cameras along with them, and they're editing the stories on their laptops and posting those stories along to their website. Now, they're not doing this for every story that they do as a print reporter, but they're doing it for several. So the New York Times, Washington Post, along with other smaller newspapers, are doing this as well. And the stories are pretty good, I have to say, as a longtime broadcast guy. The reporters themselves aren't as polished as a TV reporter, but it doesn't matter. In fact, it's part of their charm, really, that they're more conversational. It doesn't quite sound as stiff as you might see some TV reporters. And they're certainly wonderful writers. They always have been because they're print reporters. And the other really interesting thing is that newspapers are doing a better job selling advertising to video online than TV stations are. In fact, Gordon Burrell, Burrell Reports, found that in 2006, newspapers were outselling TV online in video advertising almost 3-1.
Over the local TV stations?
In local, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's shocking.
That really is.
What you're seeing on local TV sites is that, like in advertising and classifieds, they'll do partnerships with Monster.com or Cars.com, so they have text ads, and the newspapers have video ads. It's all backwards. It's really wild.
Convergence.
Convergence.
Steve Safran, the founder and editor at LostRemote.com. Before we let you go, you've got to talk about your recent post that was titled Things We Were Told About Online That Were Wrong.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I've been doing this stuff since 1999, and I keep a little collection going every time we write something and we hear from people about how that will never happen. So, you know, every once in a while I like to remind people when we come up with a new trend and they say that's not going to happen, of things that we've been told previously that weren't going to happen. For example, we were told that nobody would ever break news on their site before the story had aired or gone to press. And now, of course, that's what you do. Story breaks, you put it on your website. That newspapers wouldn't put much news online because then nobody would buy their newspapers. And again, news breaks, goes online. That nobody would buy web advertising. And of course, now it's going to surpass newspaper television. That only young people use the web and they don't want news. Well, in fact, news is, I believe, the third top category of things that people want most from online, and that it's not just young people, it's a phenomenon that spans all ages. When the bubble burst, that's it, the web was done. Wrong. That news websites would never blog, that they would never have anything to do with blogging, that wasn't journalism. Matter of fact, in 2003, I gave a talk on this, and there was a reporter who yelled at me and walked out of the room. He was so offended by the idea. He was a longtime NBC reporter, and I told him I had nothing but respect for him, and I thought it would be a respectful discussion. He yelled at me and walked out of the room.
Because he thought that real journalists don't blog.
Right.
And now we're seeing that all the time.
Yeah, I think the New York Times has 30 or 40 of them.
Now, what else did you say would happen that has come to pass?
Well, you know, it's we had said that you needed to have video online and that the quality of it didn't have to be broadcast quality. And there were so many stations that said, you know, that people wouldn't watch video that wasn't broadcast quality. And then YouTube came along and they said, oh, okay, well, it doesn't have to be broadcast quality. They said that people wouldn't watch video on iPods because the picture wasn't big enough. That people wouldn't upload video because it was too hard to do. Look at YouTube. That the whole social networking phenomenon, that those kind of tools don't belong on news sites. Then USA Today came along and changed that rule, that the website had to match the on-air look of the TV station. So you wound up with all these horrible websites that had the anchor's pictures up at the top. You know, we call that Mount Rushmore.
Steve Safran, the founder and editor at LostRemote.com, one of the very best blogs online if you want to understand what's happening to media. Steve, really quick, you got about a couple minutes left, but look out the next 3 to 5 years. What do you think is happening right now in the immediate future here that we should be aware of, some type of evolution. And we've, of course, discussed a lot of that here already, but something you'd like to put the spotlight on.
You know, I want to get back to this notion of divergence, because I think it's really important for people to understand, because it empowers them in ways that they need to get their arms around. You know, it used to be when you and I were kids, certainly, that we really did watch networks, that there was, you know, the whole NBC must-see Thursdays, and, you know, that the networks talked us into watching their lineups. And now we don't watch networks. We watch programming. We intake information, and we do it on our time, where we want, when we want. So, for example, on my TiVo, it's really, effectively, it's the Steve Network. You know, the shows that I want are on there. Do I care what network they came from? No. And I think there's a tendency for people to kind of, fear all of the technology because there's so much out there. And what's going to happen is that the tools become simpler, and that the most successful ones, the Apples, the TiVos, stuff like Slingbox, becomes more and more mainstream so that people recognize we're still really in the very, very early stages of all of this stuff. You know, I can do this stuff, but I teach this stuff. You know, I talk to people and I say, well, you can set up an RSS reader and suddenly you can have hundreds of headlines from all the news sources that you want. People go, RSS reader, what is that? But now, if on your TV, the headlines from all of your news sources are appearing, you click on one and the video shows up, well, people can understand that. So what's going to happen in the next several years is that all of these very nascent technologies that makes people's lives easier but are hard to set up become easy to set up and become transparent in our lives in the same way that you really needed to have a real education in technology to work a computer several years ago before Windows, and now you don't. Or even to set up GPS in your car a few years ago, and now it's built in. Those kinds of things just get easier and easier. That before iPods, it was a real pain in the neck to have an MP3 player, and now it couldn't be easier. It's the simplification of this stuff that is really what's most exciting.
So the metaphor for the future then would be an atomic clock, perhaps, that sets itself right when you pull it out of the box.
Yeah, it's not a bad metaphor.
Steve Safran, the founder and editor at LostRemote.com, where TV finds the future. Steve, it's always a thrill. Thank you so much, my friend.
We got to give a little credit. The founder of Lost Remote, Corey Bergman. I jumped on his coattails about a year later. So we got to give plenty of credit where it's due there to Corey.
Absolutely. The amazing Corey Bergman, who is always posting regularly at Lost Remote. Some terrific articles. Steve, thanks so much.
Thank you, Corey.
This interview will be archived in its entirety online at the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.